shrugged. She settled into her chair and began reading from her notebook. "You've been referred here by your GP, I see, and you've been suffering from depression," I nodded. "Can you tell me a bit about how you've been feeling?" she said. Her smile had assumed a slightly fixed quality. "I've been feeling a bit sad, I suppose," I said. I stared at her shoes. They resembled golf shoes, only without spikes. They were gold. Unbelievable. "How long have you been feeling sad, Miss Oliphant?" She tapped her enormous teeth with her pen. "Actually, would you mind if I called you Eleanor? It would just, you know, help the discussion flow a bit more freely if we were both on first name terms, I think. Would that be okay?" She smiled. "I prefer Miss Oliphant, but yes, I suppose so," I said graciously. Titles were better, though. I didn't know her from Adam, after all. She wasn't my friend, she was someone who was being paid to interact with me. A bit of professional distance is highly appropriate, I feel, when, for example, a stranger is examining the back of your eyeballs for tumours or rooting around in your dentine with a hooked instrument. Or indeed, poking around in your brain, dragging out your feelings and letting them sit there in the room in all their shameful awfulness. "Great," she said brightly, and I could tell that she had realised I was most decidedly not fun. We wouldn't ever be going bungee jumping or to a fancy dress party together. What else is supposed to be fun? Sing-alongs, sponsored runs, magicians. I've no idea. Personally, I like animals and crosswords and, until very recently, vodka. What could be more fun than that? Not belly dancing classes in the community hall. Not murder mystery weekends. Hindus? No. "Was there something in particular that led you to seek help from your GP?" she said. "An incident? An interaction? Telling someone how you're feeling can be a very difficult thing to do, but it's great that you took such an important first step." "A friend suggested that I see my doctor," I said, experiencing a tiny frisson of pleasure as I used the F word. "Raymond," I clarified. I rather liked saying his name, the rhotic trill at the start. It was a nice name, a good name, and that at least seemed fair. He deserved some luck. After all, given his meagre physical blessings, he already had enough to contend with, without being lumbered with, say, Eustace or Tyson as a first name. "Would you like to tell me about the events leading up to your decision to visit your GP? What prompted your friend to make the suggestion?" she said. "How were you feeling then?" "I was feeling a bit sad and things got on top of me, that's all. So my friend suggested that I should see my GP, and the GP said I had to come here if I didn't want to take the pills." She looked intently at me. "Could you tell me why you were feeling sad?" she said. I released a sigh that was longer and more unintentionally histrionic than I had been expecting. I felt my throat constrict at the end of the breath, tightening with tears. "Don't cry, Eleanor. Do not cry in front of the stranger." "It's quite boring," I said, trying my best to sound nonchalant. "It was just sort of love affair that went wrong, that's all. A perfectly standard situation." There was a lengthy silence. Eventually, purely to try and get this over with as quickly as possible, I spoke again. "There was a misunderstanding. I misinterpreted some signals. It turned out that I had very much got the wrong impression of the person concerned." "Has this happened to you before?" she asked quietly. "No," I said. There was another lengthy silence. "Who was this person, Eleanor? Can you talk a bit more about what happened to make you, how did you put it, misunderstand the signals? What were the signals?" "Well, there was a man that I took a bit of a liking to, a little crush, you might say, and I got slightly carried away, and then I realised that actually I'd been a bit silly. We weren't going to be together. And he, well, it turned out that he wasn't even right for me anyway. He wasn't the man I thought he was. I felt sad about that, and I felt extremely stupid for getting it all so wrong. That's all it was. I heard my voice trail off. Okay, well, there are a few things I'd like to unpick in all of that. How did you meet this man? And what was the nature of your relationship with him? Oh, I never actually met him, I said. She stopped writing in her notebook and there was a bit of an awkward pause. I think, in theatrical terms, it's called a beat. Right, she said. So how did your paths cross, then? He's a musician. I saw him perform and, well, I fell for him, I suppose you'd say. Maria Temple spoke cautiously. Is he famous? I shook my head. He's local. He lives here. Near me, in fact. He's not famous as such. Yet. Maria Temple said nothing and waited for me to continue. She didn't even raise an eyebrow. Nothing. I realised that I may have given her a slightly misleading impression of my behaviour. To be clear, I said, I'm not some sort of stalker. I merely found out where he lives and I copied out a poem for him, which I didn't even send. And I tweeted him once, but that's all. That's not a crime. All the information I needed was in the public domain. I didn't break any laws or anything like that. And you've never found yourself in this sort of situation before, Eleanor, with anyone else? So she thought I might be some sort of obsessive, serially fixated on strangers, charming. No, never, I said, firmly and truthfully. He was just... He caught my eye, piqued my interest, that's all. He was, you know, handsome. There was another long pause. Finally, Maria Temple sat back in her chair and began to speak, which was a relief. It was exhausting answering all these questions, talking about myself and worrying whether I sounded as stupid, as embarrassingly naive as I thought I did. Here's a scenario. I'll run it by you and you can see what you think. Let's say, for the sake of argument, Eleanor, that you had developed a crush on this man. These sorts of feelings are generally a sort of emotional trial run for a real relationship. They're very intense. Does that sound reasonable, plausible so far? I stared at her. So, she went on, there you were, quite enjoying your crush, feeling the feelings. Tell me what happened to bring this to an end all of a sudden? What crushed the crush, as it were? I slumped back into my seat. She had taken me by surprise with her startlingly accurate summary of how things had been, and then asked a very interesting, pertinent question. Despite the gold shoes and the novelty key rings, I could see already that Maria Temple was no fool. This was all going to take me a while to process, but in the meantime I tried to gather my thoughts into some sort of coherent response. I suppose on some level I actually felt the whole thing was real, and that when we finally met we'd fall in love and get married and so on. I felt, I don't know, somehow ready for a relationship like that. People, men like him, don't cross my path very often. It seemed only right not to let the opportunity pass by, and I felt sure that certain people would be pleased that I found him. When he and I were finally in the same room together, though, something that I'd worked hard to make happen, the whole thing just sort of dissolved. Does that make any sense? She nodded encouragingly. I suppose I realised right there in that room that I'd been stupid, acting like a teenager rather than a 30-year-old woman. He wasn't even special. I'd been focused on him, but really it could have been anyone. I'd been trying to please him. Nodding, she interrupted me, thankfully stopping me from going too far. There are actually quite a number of issues I'd like to suggest we explore over the next few sessions, she said. We've been talking about recent events here today, but at some point I'd like to hear a bit about your childhood. Absolutely not, I said, folding my arms and staring at the carpet. The lady does not need to know what goes on in this house. I understand that it can be a very difficult thing to talk about, she said. I don't want to talk about any of that, Maria. Please do not ask me to talk about Mummy. Damn, 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 she leapt on that, of course. Mummy's always the star turn, the big draw. What sort of relationship do you have with your mother, Eleanor? Are you close? Mummy's in contact quite regularly. Too regularly, I said. The cat was out of the bag now. You two don't get on then, she said. It's complicated. I noticed myself physically as well as metaphorically squirming in my seat. Can you tell me why? Maria asked, bold as brass, nosy, intrusive, shameless. No, I said. There was a very long pause. I know that it's difficult, really difficult, to talk about painful things, but as I said, that's the best route to helping us move forward. Let's start very slowly. Can you tell me why you don't feel comfortable talking about your mother? She wouldn't want me to, I said. That was true. I remember the last and only time I'd done it with a teacher. It wasn't a mistake you made twice. My left leg had begun to tremble, just a little quiver, but once it started I couldn't get it to stop. I threw my head back and made a noise, a sort of sigh mixed with a cough to try to distract her eye from it. Okay, she said patiently. If it's all right with you to finish up, I'd like to suggest that we try something a bit different. It's called the empty chair exercise, she said. I folded my arms and stared at her. Basically, I'd like you to imagine that this chair here, she indicated the lone upright dining chair, is your mother. She anticipated my response. Now, I know this might feel silly or embarrassing, but please just try and go with it. No one's judging you here. This is a safe space. I twisted my hands together anxiously in my lap, mirroring the feeling in my stomach. Are you willing to give it a try? I stared at the door, willing myself out of it and willing the hands of the clock to tick round to the hour. Eleanor, she said gently, I'm here to help you and you're here to help yourself, aren't you? I think you want to be happy. In fact, I know you do. Who doesn't? We can work together in this room towards helping you achieve that. It's not going to be easy or quick, but I really think it could be worth it. What have you got to lose, after all? You're going to be here for an hour either way. Why not give it a try? She had made a fair point, I supposed. I looked up and slowly unfolded my arms. Great, she said. Thank you, Eleanor. So let's imagine that this chair here is your mother. What do you want to tell her right now? If you could say anything right here without being interrupted, without fear of judgment. Come on, don't worry. Anything you like. I turned to face the empty chair. My leg was still trembling. I cleared my throat. I was safe. She wasn't really here, she wasn't really listening. I thought back to that house. The cold, the damp smell, the wallpaper with the cornflowers and the brown carpet. I heard the cars passing by outside, all of them driving to nice places, safe places, while we were here, left all alone or, worse, left with her. Mummy, please, I said. I could hear my voice outside of my own head, disembodied in the room, floating. It was high and very, very quiet. I breathed in. Please don't hurt us. Chapter 30. I don't resort to foul language as a rule, but that first session with the counsellor yesterday was bloody ridiculous. I started crying in front of Dr. Temple at the end of her stupid empty chair exercise, and then she actually said with faux gentleness that our session had to draw to a close and that she'd see me next week at the same time. She basically hustled me out onto the street, and I found myself standing on the pavement, shoppers bustling past me, tears streaming down my face. How could she do it? How could one human being see another so obviously in pain, a pain she had deliberately drawn out and worried away at, and then push her out onto the street and leave her to cope with it alone? It was 11 a.m. I wasn't supposed to be drinking, but I wiped away my tears, went into the nearest pub and ordered a large vodka. I silently raised a toast to absent friends and drank it down fast. I walked out before any of the daytime drinkers could begin an interaction with me. Then I went home and got into bed. Raymond and I continued to meet for lunch in our usual cafe while I was off work. He would text me to suggest a time and date, the only texts I had received on my new mobile telephone so far. It turned out that if you saw the same person with some degree of regularity, then the conversation was immediately pleasant and comfortable. You could pick up where you left off, as it were, rather than having to start afresh each time. During the course of these chats, Raymond asked again about Mummy, why I hadn't told her I'd been unwell, why she never visited me or I her, until finally I gave in and provided him with a potted biography. He already knew about the fire, of course, and that I'd been brought up in care afterwards. That, I told him, was because it wasn't possible for me to live with Mummy afterwards, not where she was. It was, I'd hoped, enough to keep him quiet, but no.
Where is she then? A hospital or nursing home? He guessed.
I shook my head. It's a bad place for bad people, I said. He thought for a moment.
Not prison?
He looked shocked. I held his gaze but said nothing. After another short pause, he asked, not unreasonably, what crime she had committed. I can't remember, I said. He stared at me, then snorted.
Bullshit, he said. Come on, Eleanor, you can tell me.
It won't change anything between us, I promise.
It's not like you did it, whatever it was.
I felt a hot flush streak right up the front of my body and then down my back, a sensation I can only liken to being given a sedative prior to a general anaesthetic. My pulse was pounding. It's true, I said. I honestly don't know. I think I must have been told at the time, but I can't remember. I was only 10. Everyone was really careful never to mention it around me.
Oh, come on, he said. She must have done something really terrible to... I mean, what about at school? Kids can be little shits about stuff like that. What about when people hear your name? Although, come to think of it, I don't think I remember reading anything about a crime involving an oliphant.
Yes, I suppose you would have remembered an oliphant in the room, I said. He didn't laugh. It wasn't a very good joke, on reflection. I cleared my throat. Oliphant isn't my real name, I said. I liked it, always had, and was extremely grateful to whoever had selected it for me. You didn't come across many oliphants, that was for sure. Special. He stared at me, like he was watching a film. They gave me a new identity afterwards, moved me up here. It was meant to stop people recognizing me, protect me, which is ironic.
Why? He said.
I sighed. Being in care wasn't always much fun. I mean, it was completely fine, I had everything I needed, but it wasn't all picnics and pillow fights. He raised his eyebrows, nodded. I stirred my coffee. The terminology's different now, I think, I said. They call young people in care looked after, but every child should be looked after. It really ought to be the default. I heard myself sounding angry and sad.
No one likes hearing themselves sound like that.
If someone said, please could you describe yourself in 2 words, and you said, let me see, angry and sad, then that really wouldn't be good.
Raymond had reached out then, and very gently he squeezed my shoulder.
It was superficially ineffectual, but in fact felt surprisingly pleasant.
Do you want me to find out what she did? He said. I bet I could, quite easily. The magic of the interweb, eh?
No, thank you, I said curtly. I'm more than capable of finding out myself should I ever wish to. You're not the only person who knows how to use a computer, you know, I said. His face went very pink. And in any case, I went on, as you so thoughtfully pointed out, it must have been something fairly horrendous. Don't forget I still have to talk to her once a week, as hard enough as it is. It will be complete.